In 1996, the prescription drug Adderall was officially marketed as a more effective replacement for Ritalin, an amphetamine prescribed to treat children with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Science journalist Casey Schwartz reports that by 2013, 3.5 million children were on Adderall and similar stimulants, despite the fact that experts know very little about what they do to the body and mind over the years of use. In her recent article in the New York Times Magazine called Generation Adderall, Ms. Schwartz writes about her own experiences using the drug, beginning in college and into her early 30s, and her struggles to get off of it. She joins us now, along with Dr. Harris Straightner, a psychologist, addiction specialist, vice president of the Karen Treatment Center in Manhattan, and one of the specialists interviewed for the piece. It was published in the October 16th print edition of the New York Times Magazine. I'm very pleased it has brought Ms. Schwartz and Dr. Straightner to our show right now. Hello. And to listeners, we invite you to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Have you taken Adderall and tried to get off of it? Are you currently taking Adderall? Do you have any other questions that you might want to ask my guests? Casey, when did you start taking Adderall?
I started in college. I wasn't prescribed till the year after I graduated. But as I describe in the piece, there are these robust campus black markets now at most schools throughout the country. So easy to get. And a friend handed me one night when I said, how am I ever going to get this book read and this essay written by tomorrow?
So this is the equivalent of taking speed?
Yes.
Not because you had ADHD?
No, and in fact, at that point, it was about 2001, and Adderall was so unfamiliar. It had only been on the market a few years. You know, it was sort of this magical substance that no one had much context for yet.
How did it affect you when you first began taking it?
That night was pure euphoria. You know, supposed revelation after revelation. I just loved it. I felt fabulous. I thought I was writing the most brilliant essay anyone's ever written. And I just wanted more.
And was the essay any good?
Probably it wasn't.
Harris, is there a difference between ADD and ADHD?
Yeah. Generally, you saw more diagnoses of ADD in older days, attention deficit disorder. Now you'll see attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder in the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Now, I would think that giving a stimulant to somebody who is hyperactive might be counterproductive.
Well, there's a paradoxical effect, actually. And we used to think that it only affected certain people. But now, as a matter of fact, when I was doing research for my book, The Physician's Desk Reference on Pediatric and Adolescent Mental Health, we found out that more adolescents have a reaction that's similar, where it actually slows you down and gives you a sense of euphoria. And it slows you down in the mental sense of concentrating, but yet you still feel a sped-up feeling. You still feel speedy. So there's this great euphoria, but concentration.
Now, why was Adderall developed? As I said earlier, it was intended to replace Ritalin.
Well, actually, I mean, you know, Adderall in some form or another has been with us since the 30s. It started as Benzedrine, which was used for depression, went through World War II, given to soldiers as go pills. That's what they called them. And then morphed into a very popular diet drug called Obitrol. But the FDA sort of stepped in the early 70s because amphetamines were so wildly popular. And they just said, enough, this has gotten out of control. And it wasn't until the 1990s that a pharma executive named Roger Griggs, you know, heard about Obitrol and thought this might be an interesting thing to sort of throw at the burgeoning ADHD market.
Or ADD market at that time.
Exactly.
Which was the 80s.
Yeah. It's amazing that they anticipated Big Pharma because, you know, when you look at college campuses, when I look at my patients and I see the amount of youngsters who are taking Adderall, and there are other medications as well, like Provigil, it's mind-boggling. And when you take Adderall within the prescribed amount that it should be taken in, it can be a very effective drug if you truly have that diagnosis.
Well, we have been hearing about how opioids, which also were the use of them was discouraged for a long time, have become very popular through marketing, pharmaceutical marketing. The same thing with Adderall.
Right now in the New York City subway systems, you may have seen it, Leonard, there's an ad that's specifically targeted to adults, basically saying, could you be one of the many adults who has this undiagnosed case of ADHD? And it's like, to put it on the subway when you're feeling your most inattentive often is sort of a brilliant act of marketing genius.
What does Adderall do to the brain?
Well, if you look at the effect of Adderall on the neurotransmitter system, there's an increase in dopamine, the neurotransmitter dopamine, and norepinephrine is raised as well. So again, that accounts, as I said earlier, for that speedy effect, but also for that tremendous pleasure. I mean, dopamine is just, it bathes your mind in this I don't want to get kids to use it even more, but in this luxurious feeling, it's like, you know, Adderall, chocolate, and love.
Well, Casey mentioned that she thought she'd written the most brilliant paper under the influence of Adderall the first time. Is there any evidence that it actually improves cognitive function and productivity?
Actually, not as much as people try to make it out to be. And also, there's a whole area that I'm very involved in because I'm also a jazz musician, and my godfather was Dizzy Gillespie, and one of the straightest guys, relatively speaking, in jazz. And, you know, there really isn't a correlation between these drugs and true creativity. They actually can screw you up.
Well, when Charlie Parker, who not only was a heroin addict, but also was used amphetamines in large quantities, died at the age of 35, I gather that the doctor doing the autopsy at Bellevue said that he was 55 years old. That's what it had done to his body.
Yeah, just it literally wears you down.
My guests are Dr. Harris Straitner and Carrie Schwartz. We're talking about Adderall. Carrie Schwartz's article, Generation Adderall, was in the New York Times Magazine on October 16th. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We invite some calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. If you have anything to contribute to this or any questions, Michael from Greenpoint, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for taking my call. I first want to say my mother forwarded me this article last week asking, hey, do any of these experiences sound familiar? And I'm glad to get a chance to talk about it. I'm a 32-year-old software developer living here in New York, but I was first prescribed Ritalin when I was about 10 years old. Took that for a number of years. That was switched to Adderall in high school. And then toward the end of high school, I was switched onto a drug called Concerta, which was a much more time-release format.
Now, why did they switch you from Ritalin to Adderall?
Well, they all had a pretty – they've got an interesting effect on your personality, on the way made me feel pretty antisocial. They made me feel incredibly intelligent. I don't know that I would have gone to college. I don't know that I would have had the same successes if I hadn't taken it. But they had a huge effect on the way that I felt and the way that I interacted with other people. So they kept switching between a few different drugs to try and determine which one I would handle best. And Concerta seemed to be the easiest pickup and come down throughout the day.
How different is Concerta?
Well, there's a tendency for Concerta to have a bit of a longer lasting effect, and as your caller just said, the come down is a little easier. That's one of the problems also with Adderall. We're seeing a tremendous increase in the use of marijuana with youngsters who are and adults who are coming down off of Adderall, to try to ease some of the symptoms that you go through, because you can really have tremendous anxiety.
They're using Xanax as well?
Xanax, known as bars on the street or Xannies, are absolutely used, and after alcohol, the most addictive substance there is.
So, Michael, how long before you were able to wean yourself?
Well, I can actually speak to exactly what the doctor was just speaking to. In college, I actually started drinking because I had such a hard time getting to sleep at the end of the night, such a hard time calming down and getting ready for bed. And it was at 26 when I no longer had insurance through my parents that it became too expensive to take. And I was really terrified that I wasn't going to be able to perform as well in school, that I wasn't going to get a job, that I wasn't going to be able to have access to all these skills that I developed over the last few years. And that's I just basically stopped cold turkey one day when there was no more availability, and was very pleased to find out that I was still a functioning member of society. But I've actually started to question now at 32 whether I might go back and see a doctor and talk to them. I'm a software engineer in a field with very, very smart people, and I worry some days that I could perform better if I were on the drug again.
Well,
that's not unusual, by the way.
This conversation is a cautionary tale, but not everybody sounds like Michael, sounds like they're being cautioned. In your case, Casey, you didn't have a prescription.
Well, I got one as quickly as I could. How did I get it? It was the easiest thing, Leonard, that I probably have ever attempted to do. I Googled, CBT psychiatrist near UCLA where I was taking classes. And I had the appointment within a few days, and within 45 minutes I had that prescription.
Michael was able to just go cold turkey. What happened if you didn't take the Adderall?
I felt very, very tired, and I could do a few days or a week of trying to get off. And then I would just feel so overwhelmed and incapable.
You recall a scary experience of being rushed to the hospital from your college campus in an ambulance because of heart palpitations.
Mm-hmm. A panic attack is what that turned out to be. What that really feels like, you think you're dying. And I thought I was dying. That turns out not to be so uncommon from Adderall.
A 2013 report by the Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration found that emergency room visits related to non-medical use of prescription stimulants among adults 18 to 34 tripled from 2005 to 2011 to almost 23,000.
Actually, we've seen since 2015 to 2016 among youngsters at Caron Treatment Center in our Pennsylvania location that the number is really going up tremendously. I want to say roughly 25%.
And we have a listener who told one of our producers about her experience with Adderall. She said, "It's scary stuff. You build a tolerance, and before you know it, heart palpitations are just another thing that you've gotten used to." She was taking 4 to 5 times the prescribed amount and said she was eventually brought to the hospital in an ambulance because, quote, "I felt like my heart was going to explode."
And oftentimes you do, because, again, if you think about norepinephrine, if you think about adrenaline, the rush, you will see a cardiovascular issue that arises where your pulse rate can go up. You can become diaphoretic, sweaty, nauseated. I've even had to hospitalize some patients.
Now, why would she have increased her dosage to 4 or 5 times the prescribed amount? In time to become inured to its impact?
Well, that's the definition truly of addiction. When you look at substances where you need the same, where you need to increase the amount of the same medication or drug that you're abusing to get the original effect, that literally is building up tolerance. And that's exactly what that's about.
Danielle from Chinatown, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard, how are you?
I'm well. And I'm not taking Adderall today.
Well, that's probably a good thing, since I don't think you have ADHD.
But if there was a time when they were giving Ritalin to any kid who had problems. Autistic kids were being given Ritalin, although that didn't seem to really make much sense.
Right. There's a tremendous amount, I have to admit it as a psychologist, of experimentation, especially when it comes to psychopharmacological agents that are related to the brain.
But these were children who were the guinea pigs.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say. Yeah.
Danielle, what's your story?
Well, I was diagnosed with ADHD actually as a freshman in college. I had someone in my life who, by comparison, it probably seemed impossible that I also had ADHD, but it turns out that when I left home, all the coping mechanisms that I had were just out the window, and I found myself I couldn't even read a page. And so I was prescribed Ritalin and Adderall at different times. I even tried some medical studies because I didn't have health insurance. And I have to say, as somebody who took it and is a creative person, it increases your productivity, but it really doesn't increase your creativity, as I would say. When I was in college, I found myself able to churn out the work, but it wasn't as high of a quality as it is now without the medication. And the other thing, there was definitely a stigma where I'm an open person, so I would definitely share with people my diagnosis and that I was medicated. And it turned out to be a bad thing because people would say, oh, are you off your meds today or you're on your medicine today? And it just turned into its own issue. So I eventually stopped taking it. And, you know, I definitely noticed a difference in my body. And I think that I have long-lasting anxiety from it. And, you know, it's just, I don't recommend it, even for somebody with ADD.
Now, Harris, I'm going to go back to Charlie Parker's story, mm-hmm. because since you're a jazz man, I read that during a period where he stopped taking drugs, he listened to his older recordings that he said he thought he'd been brilliant on, and heard that they weren't as good as he had imagined when he was making them.
You know, it's interesting, Leonard. I remember sitting in Stan Getz's estate. My dad was, as I said, a CPA in the entertainment world. And Stan was originally a heroin addict, went on to cocaine and alcohol. And he was listening to original recording of Focus, one of his most famous albums, and suddenly said, we need to remix this, and I may need to play some sections of it over, because he just felt that he thought at the time he was doing such a wonderful job, but then when he was listening to it in a sober state, he realized his creativity was just not improved.
I'm speaking with Dr. Harris Treitner and Casey Schwartz. Casey Schwartz wrote an article called Generation Adderall, which appeared in the New York Times Magazine in the October 16th edition. We'll take a little break and come back with more from them and from our listeners. A lot of people are calling in. Our number is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we are back with Casey Schwartz, who wrote Generation Adderall, that appeared in the New York Times Magazine in the October 16th edition. Also with us is Dr. Harris Treitner, who is one of the experts that she consulted. And Casey, you said you got a lot of feedback. We're getting a lot of feedback from listeners. But how many letters did you get? I guess you get email and tweets and everything else nowadays.
Emails have been pouring in, Leonard, from people I've never met before, detailing their own struggles with Adderall and other stimulants like Adderall. It has actually stunned me, the extent of their struggle.
A listener on Twitter wants to know how drugs like Adderall affect pregnant women.
Adderall actually can be very dangerous to pregnant women, extremely dangerous. It can be extremely dangerous to the fetus. There are some studies that have demonstrated that it can affect the developing cardiovascular system of the fetus. But I do have to say, and I'm sure Casey will comment on this because she did in her article, there are also a lot of things we don't know about Adderall.
Mm-hmm. Now, why hasn't there been more research? Usually when a drug is put on the market, it has to go through all sorts of tests, various clinical trials, and if there are any doubts, doesn't the FDA prevent it from coming on the market?
And it's interesting because, I mean, in some senses, amphetamine is now very familiar. It's been with us since at least the 1930s. On the other hand, it's incredibly difficult, and I was told this by several scientists and neurologists, to do a long-term study on something like Adderall use, how to follow a large sample for years who are taking this drug. So there's a big question mark on that.
And have we found out anything as of yet?
I mean, there have been a few studies. For instance, Nora Vokow at the NIMH has done one study looking at a year-long exposure to, I think it was Ritalin. She found a definite decrease in dopamine receptors in the brain, which means that the longer you're exposing yourself to amphetamine, the more your brain has to downregulate its own pleasure system.
And is that a permanent change in your brain?
That's an open question, Leonard.
It is, but it's certainly something that we've seen with other medications. There's a natural tendency for human beings and all living creatures to have homeostasis, to have balance in the brain. So when you look at neurotransmitter chemicals like serotonin, GABA, dopamine, etc., there's a tendency for the brain to try to balance things out. So if you decrease the number of neurotransmitter receptor sites, that's the brain's attempt, and that's a really scary thing.
Let's go to another call. Lawrence from Sheep's Meadow. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, actually, yes, East Meadow, Long Island.
East Meadow. They wrote Sheep's Meadow. Okay.
East Meadow, and I'm practiced over 30 years. And the last 20 years, I've cared for roughly 100 or so kids who have attention deficit disorder, whose childhood experience, whose educational experience, and also social experience was really being severely damaged because they actually have a disorder. The medicine wasn't meant to be used as a crutch or as a pick-me-up for people who are having struggle with work. When these kids are put on medicine, first of all, 20% of the kids taking either the Ritalin, Concerta, or the Adderall don't tolerate or don't succeed with them. 80% tend to do well. The long-acting ones have less of the highs and lows and less subject to abuse. And we do know also that there's clearly an inherited component to it, and also an environmental component, where they've done studies showing the kids taking a walk for 20 minutes who have ADD and then taking a test, if they're taking the walk in a quiet country setting, they tend to do as well as kids without ADD as opposed to the kids taking the walk in the city. And so there's environmental effect. But the point is that without that medicine, these kids have come to me as debilitated and feeling like they're losers and hopeless.
So as a pediatrician, you are prescribing it?
I prescribe it after making sure they don't have a nutritional deficiency or some other psychiatric or neurological problem, and also making sure they don't have depression. And I also manage their life outside of the medicine, making sure they're getting daily exercise to improve their neurologic balance and their energy levels, to make sure they're sleeping properly and getting good nutrition.
You know, Leonard, one of the things that we do, and this speaks to what the doctor was saying, is we at Care and Treatment Center train pediatric residents and fellows from Lenox, from Cornell, Columbia, and my own hospital, Mount Sinai. And I think it's very important, and I agree with the doctor, that we don't, you know, paint everybody with the same brush. And I said that at the beginning of the program, and Casey very clearly says that throughout her article.
Some people can take Adderall or similar drugs and have no problem.
Exactly.
And just be helped by them.
Yes.
But that number is clearly much smaller than the number of people currently taking Adderall.
A New York Times article about Adderall use among adults that was published in April 2015 reported that some industries have banned the use of stimulants for reasons of safety and also fairness. And that includes the Federal Aviation Administration, which forbids pilots to use the medications under any circumstances, and Major League Baseball. Now, is this considered a performance-enhancing drug?
In some ways it is, because if you're speeding up your performance, if you're able to, in essence, believe you're concentrating more, then that psychologically impacts you. We always have to distinguish between the physiological and the psychological. That's a very important thing to do.
Jesse from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard, long-time listener, first time on the air. Thank you for talking about this.
Well, what do you want to tell us?
Well, I was diagnosed with ADD as a child. My mother was the first kind of on, she was a school psychologist, and she was on the forefront of diagnosing children who were seen to be as problematic as really having this issue. So she had thought that, as well as my doctor at the time, that Ritalin would help me concentrate with my ADD. So they diagnosed it, they put me on it, and in my class, it totally zoned me out like a zombie. It turned me into like someone who was just basically stoned, and so much so that my teacher even called home to report that I was acting like under the influence, that I was acting counter to normal, that I was really out of it.
And how old were you?
At the time, I was ninth grade. Mm-hmm. So how old are you in ninth grade? I don't remember. I think I was like 14,
mm-hmm.
15.
Well, one of
like that's.
Well, that's a time when your brain is going through some changes, isn't it, Doctor?
Absolutely. And something that I think I was alluding to a few seconds ago was we've got to make sure that before we move to putting somebody on a medication, even if they are diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, that we take a thorough anamnesis from the beginning of their illness up until the current episode, and we look at whether or not there's a history, as Casey pointed out, a genetic predisposition to addiction. Adderall, again, is an addictive substance, and that we rule out, would it be better for me, for example, as a cognitive behavioral psychologist, to try mindfulness meditation, some of the work out of the University of Massachusetts, Jon Kabat-Zinn, where we can help people to focus in without right away rushing into placing them on a medication. A little more conservative approach.
Thank you for calling us, Jesse.
You've
worked it out. How did you finally get past this?
Yes, I found to self advocate for myself to find out what I was interested in. I didn't need to pay as much attention because I was naturally interested in it. And the things that I wasn't interested in, I had to sort of learn tools and techniques to keep me motivated, interested, curious, and to continue learning that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling us.
Well, I'm texting.
Rachel from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So this is a crazy thing. I literally just, my son was diagnosed, he's 8 years old, was diagnosed a year ago with ADHD. He was having some trouble. He's always been high energy, hard to focus, all that. We've managed it. It was like the phone call I've been waiting for my whole life. But, you know, diagnosed him, got a 504 plan going. Everything was going well last year. This year, things, you know, new school, fourth grade, a lot more demand. He's having some struggles in school, and some struggles at home. So I literally just drove away from a psychiatrist appointment where we were having him evaluated, and she literally handed me the prescription for Adderall. I got in the car and turned on the radio, and this is what was playing. She convinced, you know, she was really, I said, okay, so what are the side effects? For the long, you know, we sat with her for about an hour. She took down as much history, you know, family history, his history, all that stuff. And she basically said, yeah, I think he's a great candidate for Adderall. It's not a long-term thing. You know, you just try it. She prescribed 5 milligrams. She said, you know, like, we'll give it a go for a couple of weeks. It'll be clear if it's helping or not. So I said, you know, long-term effects and side effects. And she's like, oh, it's been around forever. It's totally safe. It's no problem at all. Like, literally, there was nothing. She said he might get a couple of headaches, and sometimes it, you know, makes it harder to sleep at night. And that was it. She's like, so we may have to prescribe him, you know, something to sleep.
And Harris, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, just again, I don't know why we have to immediately jump to the prescription of a drug. You know, my co-author of the PDR and Pediatric and Adolescent Mental Health, Dr. Michael Bahar, is probably somebody who sees a patient 3 times before they would ever dream of starting somebody on Adderall. We've got to slow down.
he was prescribed.
And isn't that ironic?
A psychologist a couple of times to talk about behavioral stuff, and we have implemented things in the class and at home in terms of focusing and meditation and mindfulness and, you know,
beautiful,
all those kinds of things. So it wasn't kind of a jump, but it was for her, I guess. It was the first time we were seeing her. But I still felt like a little wary.
Well, let's talk about some of the alternative treatments. What are they? Casey, you visited a website called quittingadderall.com.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised that it even existed?
Not really, not at this point, because I've heard so many stories about wanting to get off this drug.
And what are people suggesting?
Actually, that's much more of a place where people are going to commiserate about the extent to which they feel Adderall has ruined their lives and yet their total inability to stop taking it.
Now, are there non-drug approaches being proposed these days to ADHD?
Absolutely. There are a lot of things that we can do cognitively and behaviorally. And when we talk about cognitive, gets thrown around the word cognitive a lot. It's merely trying to restructure one's thinking. So if you come out, for example, with a negative thought about yourself, a self-statement that's negative, you have to learn how to come up with two or three positive thoughts.
But is that the kind of thing you can do with a five-year-old or an eight-year-old?
You know, it's an amazing thing to see what you can do with little kids, how you can work with dolls, how you can work with toys, how you can do make-believe and role-play. And you start to see other things. The other thing I want to mention is that a lot of times we have to do rule-out diagnoses. There are a lot of times when I have patients and I'm looking at them and I'm thinking to myself, who are adults, and I'm saying, do they have a mood spectrum disorder? Do they have attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity? Do they have both? So we need to slow it down.
Another listener wants to know if there are seizures ever connected to the use of Adderall. But you have to give me a very quick answer.
Yeah, there can be seizures, certainly when you're coming off of Adderall, and there can be seizures even when you take Adderall. Especially, you got to remember, a lot of kids in college are not just taking Adderall by itself.
I know. They're taking other drugs as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
My great thanks to both of you for being on our show. Casey Schwartz wrote Generation Adderall. It was in the New York Times Magazine, October 16th issue. Dr. Harris Straightner is one of the doctors in who she consulted, and it's been my pleasure having both of you on our show today.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thanks, Leonard.